Okay, welcome back to episode 178. Joe, how are you doing?
Well, I mean, I'm doing about as well as someone who is locked down and curfewed can be expected to do.
Well, you got to support your local governor in these things. He
I
knows what's
guess you
better.
do. I'm sure you've heard that California is now under these very draconian COVID preventive measures, which include getting rid of all of our restaurants and retail businesses.
It's been a very
More.
long 2 week, 15 days, right? Because that's
Yep.
flatten the curve, 15 days, right? That's what
Well,
the science
I mean,
says.
it's open-ended. There's really no end. I mean, it's just he'll end it whenever he feels like
But
it.
the science said it was
But
15 days, so it seems like it's been, like I don't know, like 8 months. But I guess it's just 15 days because the science said 15 days to flatten the curve. So I got to
right, flat
follow the
curve,
science.
15 days, and then now it's 7 months, and it's getting worse in terms of the government restrictions, even though the effect of the disease is completely negligible in California.
Well, the virus thrives in profitable small businesses and middle class communities. So if they destroy middle class communities and small bit local businesses, then we'll defeat the virus.
Yes, it's particularly virulent between 10 p.m. and 5 a.m.
Oh,
because
so it's like a vampire.
that's the time of our curfew.
Now, do you don a crucifix or wear garlic around your neck in the middle of the night to chase off this virus?
Both, and we sleep in the bathtub because we hear that's another safe place.
I heard in order for the virus to get access to your house, you have to consent to it, though. But the virus is very seductive, so you got to be very careful.
It is the virus is always there though, and
I've never seen it disappear because so. It must always be there. That's the
yes,
science.
it's a spiritual entity. It just drifts in the ether. In where I live, there's two or three people in the ICU, and both of these are ancient comorbid fossils. There's not a healthy person that's ever been killed by the thing. I don't know if you saw the news that in I think it was Portugal, they had a legal battle over it, and the science that was brought into the court indicated that the false positives were not 90%. The number they determined was 97%. They said that there, and they had good data and won the case, as a matter of fact, that the false positive of the PCR test with the 37 cycles was 97%, which basically means it's 100%, right?
Yes.
So it's about as close to as you could ever get in such a thing. And so this is the identifier of the cases, this fraudulent 37 cycle PCR, which every single person, including Fauci, has admitted doesn't pick up anything real. This is what has been the justification for Gavin Newsom to lock down the retail business in California, destroy it. I mean, literally destroy it, and now to put curfews. And I tell you, Tim, it's not going to get better. We're looking at the dark winter. I think you're going to see that all of the lockdowns throughout the United States are just going to get more and more worse. They're going to move toward the kind of lockdowns that they experienced in South Australia last week, and you sent me the link to it. There, they had decided that they had a crisis, and so they indicated that you couldn't leave your home. You couldn't even come out to walk your dog. The only transportation you were permitted was to back and forth to for getting food, and that was it. So this is the complete slave state lockdown. And then that turned out to be predicated on a blunder. This was determined by some intrepid reporter. And so they backed away from the whole thing. But my point is, the incrementalism we're experiencing is moving us step by step toward the complete lockdown, which then I'm afraid will be the conditions under which Operation Warp Speed can be presented to us as a savior You know, the harder they lock us down, the poorer we become, the weaker we are, then the more we'll look, you know, to taking a DNA altering vaccine as a way out.
Yeah, yeah. You know, they're offering a vaccine for a disease which has a 99.997% recovery rate, you know, if it exists at all. So it's effectively really not there. So why, you know, there's no vaccine that's safe. So why would you risk a vaccine to take something that's such a low risk for the general public? It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make sense again.
Yeah. I mean, Tim, if the PCR test is actually not picking anything up, then what are they actually testing the vaccine against?
It says on the PCR test box not to be used for diagnostic purposes.
Right.
So why are they using it for diagnostic purposes?
Well, but this, of course, just makes me all the more certain that the vaccine is simply raw malevolence.
Yeah.
I've gotten lots of correspondence. People are very worried about it, you know, because there was a news report last week about Operation Warp Speed being ready to go, and they actually talked about December as the month they thought they could pull the trigger on the thing. The military being in charge of the distribution of the vaccine certainly caught quite a few people's attention, right? And of course, everyone is afraid that's going to be mandated, that they're just going to say, you have to take it, everyone has to take it. And so people are worried about it, and with good reason, because, you know, the thing can alter your DNA. So, you know, I've had quite a few people correspond with me asking, you know, what can be done just in terms of organization against it. And I just wanted to mention, Tim, that I'm going to be posting on our comment section in the two links that you give when you put out the YouTube video, a website that I'm helping to create. This is not some kind of official powers and principalities website. It's just a bulletin board that people who listen to our show can go to. And if they're interested, they can give whatever information they want with the idea of finding like-minded people to help defend one another. I think it's come to that because, and certainly the number of people that were contacting me this week indicated they thought it was because of the idea that we're going to be getting into Operation Warp Speed pretty quick here.
Yeah, I mean, you had a Biden who, during the campaign, a debate said we're headed into a dark winter. It's like, so much for, it wasn't exactly a Morning in America campaign, was it? It's like, you know, but fear is now used as a campaign ploy for, not only for a campaign, for sort of a fake campaign, relying on an electoral fraud, but also just for kind of governing the society. So much for, you know, having freedom from fear. Well, you know, that's how they govern. We talked about, you know, this latest round of lockdowns, this is posing a response to test spikes. This is the so-called second wave, and I'd say, well, there's isn't a second wave because it wasn't a first wave. It's all been fraudulent. But nevertheless, headline, raging virus triggers new shutdown orders. Economy braces for fresh wave of pain. So just inevitable. Yes. This is the Washington Post. So consider the source. Uncontrolled coronavirus outbreak is prompting government officials across the nation to impose new restrictions on consumers and businesses, sapping the economy's momentum and delaying the recovery of millions of jobs lost during the recession. Can you say Great Reset? You know, it's like, you know. By the way, New York Times published an article saying the Great Reset's a conspiracy theory. Not true. Even though it's openly admitted, talked about, you know, Time magazine had it on its cover. So the fact the New York Times has denied it, we now know that it's true. Here in Virginia, Governor Ralph Northam tightened limits on restaurants and indoor gatherings effective at 12:01 last Monday. And of course, we've had similar moves, more actually stricter moves in California, Oregon, and Washington. They issue joint statements discouraging travel and advising visitors to quarantine up to 14 days. See, none of this is mandated. It's all encouraging, discouraging. No, can you imagine? You drive through the street, what are you going to check in? No one's going to do that. But again, what this is doing, this is effectively pretty much shutting down commerce, normal commerce. It's what it does to the
Yes.
economy. The mayor of New York City, meanwhile, warned parents that public schools could be closed. He did that. Again, this is all because the test spikes went up to like 3% positive rate for test results. As you mentioned, 97% false positive. What's the how many people are dying? How many people are seriously ill? From what I understand, the hospitalizations and even the death rate are well within the 5-year averages, so there's nothing really special going on. It's all hype. Similar measures are taking effect or under consideration elsewhere, including Chicago, where the mayor on Thursday issued a stay-at-home advisory just hours before Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker threatened a mandatory statewide order. Now, I don't know how he can enforce that, or if he has the resources to do that. Again, the main point is shutting down businesses because his wealthy family will be in a position to profit mightily from the effects of this, and they have in the past, by the way. And perhaps we'll talk about the Pritzker family dynasty, of a banking family, in our main topic here about some of these ruling families that bless us with their leadership. Of course, they're trying to cancel Thanksgiving. Yeah, a group of seven U.S. governors, five Democrats and two Republicans, wrote an op-ed for the Washington Post proclaiming Americans need to stay home this Thanksgiving. For the past 9 months, we've been following guidelines and mandates from these governors to slow or stop the march to spread COVID. Remember, it started 15 days to flatten the curve to stop the spread or take pressures off hospitals. But apparently it worked. But then why are we doing it now? Chris, as you mentioned, Gavin Newsom has announced a mandatory overnight stay-at-home order that'll be instituted throughout most of California to combat a surge in new coronavirus cases. A measure that comes just days after the governor enacted a dramatic rollback of reopening in much of the state. The order issued by California Department of Health, Public Health will prohibit most of non-essential activity outside the home from 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. in counties in the strictest tier of state's reopening roadmap, whatever the purple tier. The restriction goes into place on Saturday and lasts through December 21st. Oh, just in time for Christmas. The virus is spreading at a pace we haven't seen since the start of the pandemic. And again, all based on these bogus test results. There isn't a surge in people dying, getting seriously ill. So again, it's all nonsense. The question is, will Gavin Newsom follow his own curfew order?
I just wanted to interject something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so when Gavin brought out his blueprint for a safer economy, which switches the color code system for reopening, he also added new rules. And it's really important to understand these rules. He pointed out that businesses must shut down within 24 hours instead of 72, which was the prior condition. In other words, when Gavin decides that you're out of the orange and into the purple, you've got to shut down within 24 hours. Moreover, the state will announce the color changes twice a week instead of once a week. And then my favorite is the announcement will not come every Tuesday, but in real time as necessary. Okay, now, obviously, these are preposterous, right? And the idea of giving this kind of snap count power. In other words, they can just shut it down almost immediately. But think about why they would do this. What they're doing is they're psychologically conditioning business owners to not have the confidence to reopen. Because what they're saying is if you can reopen if you want. But instead of the old, kind of where you'd have a few days to like reorganize yourself, now they're saying we can shut you down in 24 hours and we can shut you down any day of the week. That's what they're saying to businesses. So this is just a way to make sure that California businesses will not reopen. So many of them are just hanging by a thread, you can imagine. Now with the new lockdown and with this new psychological kind of blow that they're going to with all of this instant lockdown stuff, you can be sure that over the next 60 days, a huge fraction of our businesses will simply announce that they're not going to reopen.
Yeah, and then they can just get another relief check and go and get a universal basic income support.
You know. As long as that lasts, buddy. But in our country, we buy trinkets made in China and food grown in Mexico with dollars invented by the Federal Reserve here in the United States, and I'm not sure how long that system is going to last.
No, yeah, they've also apparently panic buying is back for toilet paper and cleaning products.
Oh yeah.
Now I noticed last week there was news reports popping up about this, signaling people to panic buy, of course. So when you run a news story about possible shortages and panic buying, guess what's going to happen?
Tim, I went to Costco yesterday, and remember Mr. Toilet Paper that I talked about?
Uh huh.
He was back.
So that we're back at that again.
He was back. Yeah, he was like they weren't completely out, so he wasn't in his element yet. The pallets were there, and they were going through them pretty good. There was panic buying. Every single shopping cart had like a case of it, and they've restricted to like five cases or something. But he was there, and I could see. I wanted to talk to him, didn't get a chance to. But I have a feeling he'll be back in business here pretty quick because. We can panic harder than Costco can create toilet paper, and so we'll be running out here pretty quick.
Everyone panic buying toilet paper, fighting over toilet paper, not going to focus on getting Gavin Newsom out of office.
Exactly, the panic we should be doing is what can we do to get rid of basically a dictator. Who is what is, you know, he is, he's worse than a dictator because a dictator at least typically would have some reason to exploit the population and therefore he wants to keep them alive. I mean, Newsom is just a genocidal maniac. I mean, he just wants to destroy the businesses and then to starve the population and to see how low he can get it. This is what we're looking at.
This week we were treated to two interesting videos. One was, of course, was Gavin Newsom's apology for being caught violating his own rules. Very entertaining, very telling. And then there's also, did you see Andrew Cuomo's press conference regarding the schools? His condescending.
Yeah, masterful.
He accuses the guy asking questions of being obnoxious. Can you imagine Andrew Cuomo accusing someone of being obnoxious?
It just defies kind of like it was surrealistic, you know.
What's the lack? I guess is lack of self-awareness a sign of psychopathy or?
No, I actually think that these are trained people. I think that someone like Cuomo is part of the crazy making.
Yeah,
you know, behaves like that for a purpose. It's like Newsom gives these orders, and then the next day you see these pictures of him like. You know, getting drunk with all these socialites all around him. And it's just a huge crowd of people and they have like wine open and, you know, Chateaubriand and it's just this mob scene. And it's like, he goes, well, gee, I forgot. I mean, whoops, you know, it's a mistake. I'm sorry. But this is just crazy making. We have to obey. They could care less. And yet they give us the rationale, the reason why we have to like separate and not have Thanksgiving with our families.
I mean, his apology reminded me of his kind of sort of apology when a few years ago, this was like 10 years ago, when he got caught screwing his chief of staff's wife.
Yeah.
And then the chief of staff resigned. And then as the chief of staff resigned, he praised Gavin Newsom.
Yeah, I wanted to get in because
I actually
live under the rule of these people, so yeah. I know, you know, got them out about like the Gettys, Newsom, the
this
Brown.
This was mayor of San Francisco, yeah.
The ruling families here in California. But I wanted to ask you before we get into that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we had that amazing press conference with Sidney Powell, and what did you think of that as far as the election process? Do you think that they actually have a chance to overturn it? What is your opinion about all that?
Well, I mean, the evidence is there. In Michigan, there's 300,000 more votes than there are voters. I think Michigan has 8.8 million registered voters, and this election they registered 8.1 million voters, if I have those numbers correct. Now, that would require 100% participation plus 300,000. So how do you get 104%? I think if I do my math right, it's like 104% participation. How does that happen without fraud? There are, in those precincts in Detroit, that area, Wayne County, I think it, there some precincts had like 350% voter turnout, some were 125%. This is why their votes weren't certified initially. Then the two Republicans on the board were pressured to certify, bullied. In fact, you can watch it on social media, and they've since have signed affidavits saying they eventually certified it under conditions of an audit, which then they sensed that the Secretary of State, who's a SPLC flunky under Gretchen Whitmore, started to backtrack, saying there's no way to make them perform an audit. So they wanted to rescind their certification, and they said, you can't do that. Nothing in law that says you can rescind a certification. But now they've signed affidavits saying they were intimidated, feared. Their physical safety was threatened, which makes for an interesting court case, because they can say, well, technically, there's no way to rescind a certification. But if you do it under coercion, it's not a certification. What don't they understand about the word certification? So now Michigan is in jeopardy. I mean, I don't see how you can account for 300,000 extra votes, especially when the margin of victory was 140,000 for Biden. If you want a good summation of all this, yeah, there is a 51-minute press conference where Giuliani, Sidney Powell, and is it Jenna Ellis? Came in. This is a summary, and they sort of lecture the press on what their job is to do, what to expect. You can't expect a press conference to lay out all the evidence. That's what the court case is for. This is the legal effort of the Trump campaign. But nevertheless, then next day it's criticized. It's called a clownish event. I don't know why. It seems to me it was pretty compelling, you know, summarization of the case, as much you can expect in a press conference outside a courtroom, because in any court, all that evidence, they're going to show it in the court. So you don't expect them to show all their evidence, nor could they, you know, nor could you have the time for that, nor would the press have the patience for it. But then Tucker Carlson came out and I criticized Sidney Powell for not wanting to come on the show and share all the evidence. Well, I don't know why he'd expect her to do that. She's making some very, you know, bold claims, but I think claims that I think the evidence suggests have some validity, that this is a longstanding international vote rigging operation involving these electronic voting counting services, which change names. You know, like Dominion, and then there's the was it Smart Tech or Smartmatic?
Yeah,
Smartmatic, right?
Oh gosh, I can't recall.
I think it's Smartmatic. The Smartmatic was created by these two guys who worked for Chavez in Venezuela to rig the vote, and it's apparently been done in Argentina and various other countries. Chris, people talk about the hammer and scorecard operation. That's a CIA operation. It's done to monitor foreign elections and manipulate them if possible. That's what the scorecard thing is about. So all these programs, all these shadowy private firms with ties to the Clinton Foundation. By the way, as recently as last year, Democrats were going off on Dominion. Ron Wyden, Klobuchar, and Elizabeth Warren were raising questions about Dominion. And Dominion seems to be a vote rigging operation that several states, 27 states, if I have that right, have agreed to use. And so not only is the mail-in voting a big question in this election, now we have the evidence, or at least reasonable reasons to suspect that there's been a massive electronic vote rigging operation where votes were just clicked, and you saw evidence for that on election night. You have fractional voting, which is, I don't understand. You have which is almost like financial fraud, where you can steal fractions of pennies. And apparently the software allows for stealing fractions of votes. So you can...
Did you see, by any chance, the drop and roll analysis that...
Yes, that was...
That was the powerful
3-minute video, Gateway Pundit.
Yeah, I mean, I would recommend everyone look at that, because I'm sure that that'll be part of what is brought forward in the court case.
Yeah, there was
shows that.
Yeah,
you know that you have this dump of enough ballots to basically bridge the gap between whatever Trump's lead was.
This was in four states.
And And then you have a statistically impossible to be accidental another tranche of votes that come in as time moves along, and you have a ratio that's established. This is called the roll. So the drop is this huge amount of unexplained ballots that suddenly give Biden a lead, and then you have the what's called the roll. These are terms basically I think used from vote rigging processes. And in the roll, they would, you know, you would it'd have like 30 or 40 different insertions after the drop, and they would all be gauged at a certain ratio. You'd have like 50% for Biden and 49% for Trump. Mm-hmm. And this is just impossible to be accidental because, well, before the drop, you have, Trump having, you know, thousands of these insertions with having a plurality, but then you just can't find, you know, naturally occurring collections of votes that have this precise ratio. It has to be, you know, somehow structured vis-a-vis a computer.
Yeah, the remaining ratio stays the same.
And yeah, that the ratio never changes.
Yeah, and for that random, it wouldn't happen, yeah.
Right. So BitChute's analysis, I completely agree with. I think that it shows that, you know, you're dealing with a non-random and fraudulent, vote rigging process that's being controlled by computers.
Yeah, and it seems to me there's two ways you can look at this. And Sidney Powell says what happened was Trump was getting many more votes than they expected, and so the plan they had wasn't going to work. So they had to. This is why you have the vote counting stop. You know, at 10:30, 11 o'clock, and it picks up again at 3 a.m. And this is how you get like 115,000 votes for Biden, none for Trump, 85% for Biden, 15% for Trump. They had to rush those votes in to make up the difference, and so they got sloppy. Or maybe the real motive behind all this is they wanted to get caught because they wanted to just throw the election into chaos.
Right. And this gets to my concern is that what we're looking at is theatrical production. I mean, you know, 4 years ago we had, Hillary's laptop and Pizzagate. And then this, you know, it all kind of disappears. But we feel that we're engaged in a real democratic process. It really means something. And now we have this, you know, just incredible, dramatic pageant in front of us. Probably the most dramatic presidential campaign, if one can call it that, in history. And yet, in back of it all, you have Operation Warp Speed, the vaccine. You know that is sitting there. And I've wondered, and I was curious about, you know, what you think about this. Is that, You can, if Trump has a miraculous kind of resurrection here, he would be in a perfect place to ask America, even the skeptics, to take the vaccine, because he would basically be the Q theory white hat guys have claimed all along, right? I mean, he would have, and imagine if he actually throws a few of these people in jail. I mean, who could question him? He would be as beloved as like the Lifetime actor character Adolf Hitler. You know, you would just do whatever he told you to do. So this is one of the things I'm worried about, is that he might be set up for that role. It's very disappointing and telling that he has never taken a stand against. He talks about these issues like mandatory vaccine, mask wearing, long-term lockdowns. It always seems as though he's opposed to them, but then he does nothing, and then the process just rolls forward. So this is something I'm worried about, is that the drama may be set up so that he is all powerful to the skeptics. I mean, they're maybe presuming that the left wing will just take the vaccine because they love to do so. But the skeptics would be more likely to take it if Trump wins and he comes back from. Now, on the other side, if Biden holds up, I think that the Trump drama will actually create a backbone for the skeptics, because they will, so many of them will say, well, look, we've got nothing to lose. The election process is gone. They can rig everything. It's every man for himself. And we'll just fight down to the bitter end. I mean, this is, these are scenarios, but that's just something that is logical to me. So a Biden victory, it would seem to me to be less compelling for the vaccine than a Trump victory, oddly. And that's why I am kind of curious about all of this.
Yeah, it's the problem. You do it. Trumpeting, touting this vaccine as sort of a savior. And of course, that what that does is that ratifies or confirms the whole scandemic as true, when there's never no reason for any extraordinary miracle vaccine because there's no pandemic. There is no pandemic. Never was a pandemic. And the numbers show that.
If they tell us that the pandemic existed, we wouldn't even know exactly. Anyone had ever gotten sick.
And you have these reports and news, it's all fake. It's the same way they declared Biden, the winner. It's all not based on anything. To this day, they still say Trump's looking to meeting with state legislators to as a last-ditch effort to reverse the will of the people. Well, no, the question is, with the fraudulent votes, the vote tallies cannot be trusted as a reflection of the will of the people because it's vote fraud. So like there's an AP story I was reading about that. So he's meeting today with the Michigan legislatures and they're indicating they don't want to overturn the will of the people. That's what they're saying public or indicating public. It's like how no one's really decisive or clear about this. But no, the whole question is the vote tallies are not trustworthy. So you can't cite those as will of the people. They have the power to appoint their own electors, and Congress, can refuse these things. So Congress has the power to refuse electors if they think the vote's tainted. There's that. But again, the same thing, with this vaccine. What is it for? 94% effective. Well, they're giving it to people with moderate to symptoms. Like, why would you bother to take a vaccine if you get moderate symptoms? You just suffer through it, if it's a moderate. They're citing all these deaths, 250,000 deaths. Well, there's already admitted late last summer that only about 9% can be directly attributed to COVID-19 of the 180,000 death cases.
6%.
Or 6%. So, then people forget that. I wrote a report today that actually masks cause COVID. I mean, what they mean by that is it causes respiratory diseases. Tests have shown, CDC's own tests show that people who wear masks more often are much more likely to develop respiratory illnesses. So this whole mask stuff is just nonsense. Again, a lot of this, it goes back to slave trading. They want people wearing the mask, being compliant, same way they want people locked down. So they're not just locked out of the economy, demoralizes and terrorizes people. People aren't dumb enough to be terrorized or demoralized, and that's what we're confronted with right now. And it really, it's the fact that it can go this far and still people, believe it to the extent that they do. It's amazing to me. It's the power of propaganda. But if you watch the media, like I said, if you were one to watch the media coverage of this stuff, or just get headlines and read these stories, and it's like, again, I love comparing the election results and the COVID because you can see just the propaganda, like in supposed news stories, like AP news stories, they're obviously editorializing in the middle of this news story, calling it a crackpot scheme to reverse the election, even though it's perfectly legal and constitutional. The ignorance of these reporters or just the dishonesty is amazing. Same thing with the COVID-19, where they talk about the raging pandemic. Oh, sorry, what do you mean raging? Oh, test positive tests are going up. Oh, really? But isn't it like 90%, 90, 95, 97% false positive? Yes. Then why should I be concerned? There's no valid test for these things. for this disease. It
Yeah.
makes
The
it, you know, it's.
mainstream media simply collapsed. I mean, it always has been a propaganda tool, but it used to mix propaganda with news. Now it's just propaganda 24/7.
Yeah, there is some pretense of objectivity, or, you know, in these things. Where is the investigative reporting? Like, where are the investigative reporters looking into election fraud? Do they actually really think, with the stakes as high as they are, that there isn't election fraud in, like, these machine Democrat-controlled cities? In Detroit, for Pete's sake? That's like, no, there's no election fraud there. You know?
But it's fascinating. I mean, the mainstream media has dropped out of the news business. And
pretty
that's
much,
been completely taken over by the independent media. I mean, if you want to know where you're going to find your news concerning, you know, the Detroit election fraud, it's Tim and Joe.
Yeah, well, you know, any number of sources. You have to go to these.
And a thousand other, right. It's the independent media. It's not, you're not going to find it on.
Like,
any
I was watching, Giuliani has a thing called Common Sense. Now, whatever you think of Giuliani's career, whatever, on this, he's been pretty good. And he has a thing called Common Sense. And today, this evening, I watched, it's like a 30-minute summation of the case. And he's talking about, you know, basically to prove a case like this, you don't need, you need circumstantial evidence to produce a preponderant amount of evidence. And that's enough to get a conviction. And that's what we have here. What is common sense? What does Occam's razor say about all this? Obviously, it's election fraud. When you have 100, 104, 105% voter turnout, you know, when they're preventing poll watchers, Republican poll watchers and challengers from getting near the ballot, they're in violation of state law, which should invalidate those ballots. What do you think is going on there? You know, and when you have, I guess it was, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Georgia, and North Carolina, where Trump's enjoying comfortable leads, and four of them turn, you know, in the at 4 a.m. in the morning, you know, when all these mail-in ballots come in, which everyone agreed going into it were not safe, especially the way they did it, because they used sour voting rolls and they just mailed them out unsolicited. And you have in Pittsburgh, there are 17,000 voters in Pittsburgh who showed up at the polls and were told they had already voted, just in one city, 17,000. That's in Pennsylvania. So what do you think happened there?
Yeah, and Giuliani's point, I'm not sure people kind of understand what he's saying. I mean, the legal principle is that fraud vitiates everything.
Yes.
I mean, they don't have to prove, like, every single ballot was fraudulent. They just have to prove that there was fraud. That there was, because it is such an important legal principle. It, you know, in all of the, if you've ever seen a legal textbook, that expression is just everywhere. You cannot achieve something under law through fraud. And it doesn't mean that you have to be proven fraud in every single transaction. They don't have to do that. If the Republicans can just make the case that is very powerful and clear that there is an organized fraudulent process that the Republicans are having to struggle against to get their candidate his votes, the justices were on completely coherent grounds to say that's all we have to do. You just made the case. The election is void as far as the certification of Biden and Trump's president. I mean, it's that simple.
There's a reason why we have a certification process to sort out these very things that the founding fathers were able to foresee happening. So you have more than a month to let the process work out. And when you hear things like asking Trump to reverse the election results, reverse the victory, no, nothing's been reversed because no decision has been made yet. Not been certified yet.
I'll tell you, it's going to be a dramatic. I mean, this thing could end up in the Supreme Court. I'd be surprised if it doesn't, actually. And when it does, good heavens, can you imagine the testimony? I mean, it will just be spectacular. And if Trump comes out a, like a Caesar-like triumph Boy, he'll be in a position to really get Operation Warp Speed rolling, won't he?
Yeah. Or, I don't know, maybe at that point he'll assert his independence. I don't know. You know, the metapolitan. And again, a real investigation could uncover a whole lot from both parties, by the way. Because both parties, I mean, so you have the Diebold thing back in 2004 in Ohio and the Republicans. So, but it appears that the Democrats this turnaround has kind of turned voting fraud at sort of an industrial level, you know, which now you can't. In the past, the public could avert their gaze and pretend that the election was honest, and psychologically, it has an effect on the public. Now, there's no way. Even Democrats know they cheated. I mean, the smart ones, though. You know, 86% of Republicans. You know,
a real investigation could expose Giuliani's role in 911.
Well, yes.
And I mean, you can. Yeah. I mean, you could get into like who is more heinous, you know, inside the Supreme Court and exposure to the public. Yeah. It could just unravel down into just raw malevolence everywhere. But I think, you know, we'll see.
This is a good way to in our main topic is that not dealing with the realities of 9/11 or the JFK assassination or the Gulf of Tonkin or Pearl Harbor and these things, the public has sort of let their political class sort of run wild, and therefore the cancer has metastasized, the corruption has been so bad, and each successive generation is getting less and less inhibited in the crimes that they commit against their own people. And so what, I mean, if you just look and discuss that our political class in general, I mean, you are out there in California, you have what they call the California Mafia, you know, with Pelosi, yes. Newsom, the Browns, and Kamala Harris now sort of been anointed, brought her up. And this ties into the elite, like the Gettys, and I'm sure we can talk about the connections, organized crime, Pelosi's father, back in Baltimore. So, but what do you have to say about that?
Well, so the beginning of the California Mafia was the Gettys becoming the wealthiest family in the world at one point, supposedly in the 20th century, midpoint of the 20th century, and this is like. You can see the criminality and the secret society construction of an artificial lifetime actor from the very beginning. And I think it's just absolutely critical that when you look at California, if you want to understand it, you have to understand how Getty was created, how John Paul Getty becomes rich. And it's public knowledge, though people don't really understand the data. I mean, because of our show, we kind of put all this in context and understand it immediately. And hopefully people listening to us can too, because it's really very straightforward. So Getty, he was the son of an oil man. They were not very successful. The father and son supposedly didn't get along, and John Paul went off on his own, and he hit a well. And so he decided at that point, and this was 1910, 1911, he goes, I'm going to go back to school. And we've shown many times that one thing about lifetime actors, it's when they create their connection to other lifetime actors, when they get set up, you can usually trip them up. It's sort of like, Bill Gates's his contract with IBM to develop their software for the PC, right? I mean, it's just so preposterous that it really, it exposes Gates as someone who's being created for a role. Well, Getty decided that he's going to go back to school. And so he says, I'm going to go to Oxford, even though he was from Oklahoma and Minnesota. He goes, I want to go to Oxford. And so he arranges, because he wasn't in the class, so he wanted to go to Oxford. He goes, well, how am I going to get in there? So he says, well, I guess I'll just have the president of the United States write a letter for me.
That's easy.
And so William Howard Taft, remember one of the founders of Skull and Bones, mm-hmm. created a letter for him. Now, this was a very special letter because he actually said that not only do I want this kid to go to Oxford and you can let him in, but I want him to go to Magdalene College, which is the Masonic center of the world, basically. This was the tip. He says he wants him to go to Magdalene College, which is a college in the Oxford system. And so he even though he wasn't actually enrolled, somehow he wasn't registered, but because of Taft's, you know, Skull and Bones intercession on his behalf, they let him in. Now, here's this kid from Oklahoma, but he mixes well. He becomes friends with some like powerful people, like, for example, his best friend, Edward VIII, the king of England, who was attending school there, and they become close friends. And so you can see this is just a preposterous story, right? The kid in Oklahoma sitting there underneath the oil well with, you know, bare feet, and the next thing you know, he's dining with Edward VIII. I mean, it's obvious that this is a Masonic, you know, creation. Then Getty, he gets all of these sweetheart deals in the Middle East. And you know, to show you a parallel, think about like Biden's son, the Bush family, Cheney, you know, think of all the sleazy deals, you know, that the secret societies arrange in the Middle East today. Well, it was the same way back then. Getty was just one of the puppets that was, you know, put in charge of these areas. And so he moved back to England, and he, at the time of the World War II, just before the war broke out, he was brought to Germany, where he met with the Rothschilds. Now, this was really interesting because he basically arranged to have all of the art and furniture transferred to him, and then it got out of the country. Now, Rothschild himself, who was under arrest, they let him escape, and he made his way back to England. And Getty got all the furniture and art out. Then when Getty was living later in the 50s in Britain, he was living at Sutton Place, this huge, you know, Tudor estate places. He basically was, you know, cheek and jowl with the Rothschild family. So this was Jean-Paul Getty. This was the basis of the money. He's a lifetime actor. He was artificially created. The letter from Taft, which it like got rid of the requirement of the application, and it put him in Magdalena College, his introduction to, you know, the King of England. It's just kind of silly. Anyway, so the Gettys then picked up the Newsome family as financial stewards, basically. So you have a lot of Newsomes, two generations of them working with the Getty families in San Francisco now. They eventually use a law firm that is run by Brown, and they decide he's a good guy. They make him the governor. These families are entwined. I mean, I won't even go into all the different marriages between the Browns, the Pelosis, the Newsomes. Gavin Newsom was actually brought into the Getty family, and they actually raised him. I mean, he wasn't even outside of the household. He was actually raised by the Gettys in San Francisco. You can see that, you know, the artificiality of it. The Browns are a Bohemian Grove family, and so are the Pelosis. Now, this is where they met. I'm sure this is how you constructed the whole thing. It was all the Masonic elements, you know, presented Getty to Taft, the Skull and Bones guy. He then sets up Getty with, with the head mason in England, with Edward VIII. he uses him in as a middleman in the Middle East. He comes back, he's got nothing but money, and he sets up a little Masonic cesspool in San Francisco. And these guys are working with him, but because you can see look at the Bohemian Grove photographs from the 19th century, you can see how Masonic it was during this time. I mean, there's a famous picture of where they've got a corpse. You know, they say, well, maybe it's a dummy. If you look closely, you can see they've killed someone just for fun or some kind of sacrifice. And all the people around the body have got Masonic outfits on and making Masonic hand gestures, you know. So this is Bohemian Grove. And then this is the last little point I was going to make is that, so you got Nancy Pelosi, who is, you know, this modern polysexual, you know, cultural Marxist person. But you can see how artificial she is because her husband is a Bohemian Grove member. That was discovered and they got hold of one of the rosters and his name was on it. Now think of the Bohemian Grove, Tim. I mean, it's the most anti-modern feminist organization on the planet. No women are allowed. These are all oligarch class individuals. A lot of them, I mean, like Henry Kissinger are, you know, well-known womanizers. And yet there's Pelosi's husband right in the middle of all these guys. So you can see that her presentation of herself to the world is fake. The Newsoms are, you know, the family has some connections into military intelligence. One little kind of interesting note is that his cousin, you know, once removed in San Francisco, Gavin, he was the guy who brought the Shah back from Iran after the Khomeini's revolution. He brought him back, and the Shah needed some work in a hospital, and he signed his name as like Philip D. Newsom, the guy, his handler, who was Gavin's cousin. So you can see the family was, you know, they were into the whole ruling class Masonic cesspool.
Didn't he also deliver the ransom money?
Yeah. Well, Gavin's, I think it was his uncle, was, you know, because it may have been his father, memory doesn't serve, but the generation before Gavin, our current governor, he was one of the financial stewards of the Getty family. Again, it's the interconnection of all of these, you know, Masonic, Bohemian Grove, skull and bone families. He was the one that they used to actually deliver the money to ransom Getty's grandson after Getty famously negotiated a lower price.
Yeah.
So you can see, you know, how the quality of the humanity that these people have. Anyway, yeah, they negotiated a lower price, and then Gavin Newsom II, he goes and he drops it off. It's just a lump of lifetime actors. There was one famous deal where but Brown was governor. He gave the Pelosi's and the Newsoms Squaw Valley, which
that's right. Didn't they develop it with taxpayer money?
Well, the state of California developed it for the Olympics, and then it was done. It's one of the most, I mean, commercially powerful entities the state has, and he gave it to these two families for a buck. It was a huge hue and cry, there's a famous story that the Pelosi's and the Browns were upset because they just couldn't make enough money. You know, they wanted to one wanted to develop it one way, but this is all nonsense because if you look at how they in the subsequent generation support, for example, supported Gavin's becoming governor. Mm-hmm. I mean, Gavin, the current governor, he has a vineyard called Plump Jack, which is a Shakespearean play on the word on Falstaff, and so he's got this, but it's all paid for by the by the Gettys. And then the Browns, Jerry actually is one who introduces him to all of the political class in San Francisco, so they were setting him up. So California's had this weird criminal cartel that has been on top of us now for going on like 80 years.
Yeah, it's almost as if they get wealthier and wealthier as the state slinks deeper into bankruptcy.
100%. I mean, it's, there's this completely inverts. I mean, the state is $2 trillion in debt, which is a lot. And yet these families, I mean, if you go through the net worth of even like, you know, trivial kind of financial people like Nancy Pelosi, she's worth like $80, $90 million. They're all worth, that would just be a typical checking account for this group. I don't think she's ever worked a day in her life. She makes a couple hundred grand as a congressperson, but somehow there's always these mysterious, you know, funding sources that no one ever digs too deeply into. But I'm sure they're, you know, it's sort of, I mean, just imagine the, I mean, Biden's son, he became very wealthy in the Middle East, right, you know, following 9/11. I mean, just think about his level of intellectual skill in these play, in, right? I mean, it's zero, right? The guy is a drug addict. And he doesn't seem to have any kind of, what I've seen him, he just seems like a zombie. And yet he's very wealthy. He's on the board of all these, you know, oil companies. This is exactly the same thing. If you look at these guys, every one of them is just all of the Newsoms, the Pelosis, obviously the Browns.
Yeah, well, and Pelosi, of course, her family comes from Baltimore. And her, I think her maiden name is D'Alessandro.
Mafia. There were mayors and congresspeople in Baltimore. Again, it's Masonic.
They were tied to the Luches crime family, Luciano, that whole, the heroin racket. And there was an investigation that was kind of quashed back in the early 60s that the Kennedy administration was doing. But yeah, he was known to be good friends with these mobsters. And of course, you don't have that level of criminality, organized crime, without some sort of public protection or public cooperation, which is what organized crime is all about. Now, he's never been convicted of anything, and that sort of thing. But that's like saying Meyer Lansky was never convicted of anything, you know. And Al Capone was only guilty of tax fraud. But they amassed these huge fortunes using public office, graft, and these things, and they amassed these huge fortunes. Providing services for like organized crime, and of course, you know, elite families like the Gettys, which tied to the Rothschilds, and the Brofmans, which is another organized crime family, very powerful in Canada. Of course, recently that name came up because of the Nexium sex cult, human trafficking thing, where one of the daughters, who's a heir to the Brofman fortune, I think was indicted. So there's that. And, of course, when you talk about the Brofman crime family, that ties to the political career of John McCain, because he married into the Hensley family. The Hensley was a lieutenant for a Brofman-connected mobster in Arizona. And he that's how financed his political campaign. Ultimately, ties back to the Brofman, you know, fortune. You know, Brofman owns Seagram's, but they, during Prohibition, they made a lot of money, you know, with illegal, you know, alcohol sales, like a lot of other crime families. Another example where, again, our political leadership, people who run for presidents, serve in the Senate, have direct ties to organized crime and all types of other, you know, chicanery and, you know, illegal operations. So,
yeah, and, you know, it's also the case that they're all Zionist. Mm-hmm. You know, I've talked about this so many times that you have this strange DNA that no matter whatever the oligarchs are, how they present themselves, they always end up with just a few kind of, it's a term I almost hate to use this, you know, at this point, DNA, you know, that is very similar. And one of it is Zionism. Nancy Pelosi just made this bizarre assertion at one of these meetings she was at, where she claims that she had, as a child, would like worship the what's called the Refuseniks. I don't know if you know, if you recall what they are, but there was a group like in the, you know, like in the Soviet Union.
Yeah, they were the dis.
That were Jews who were like kept from being able to immigrate to.
Was it Nathan Sharansky? It was a Nathan.
Yeah, that's right. And so they call themselves the Refusenik. And so, you know, Pelosi, she claims that she knew one of them or knew the name of one of them, and that she would chant his name basically all of the time, as, you know, as like this hero that we would, you know, kind of look to. It was, you know, he had a legitimate Greek beef evidently, but the idea that supposedly a Catholic woman would have this kind of weird fixation on a Jewish refusenik.
Why were all the Christians oppressed by the communists?
Yeah, I mean, I don't, yeah, exactly. I'm just going to read it because it's kind of a useless thing. This is Pelosi's quote. She goes, "I'm so honored to be here." It was at a, you know, it was at a Jewish kind of event. So, you know, it's kind of politician kiss the baby thing, but still it's weird. Very, very weird. She goes, "I'm so honored to be here personally, officially, and in every way with Speaker Eldestein. You'll hear the full story. For a long time, when he was practically a teenager," because Eldestein was the, Yuli Eldestein, one of the refuseniks. He was there, and then he goes, "You hear the full story. For a long time, when he was practically a teenager, but like early 20s in the gulag, the rest of us were out in San Francisco, all over the world. But my experience was in my home city of San Francisco, and only several years before I was in Congress, we would hold up his picture. He had a little beard, long haired, and the rest so cute. And we would hold up his picture and chant his name to free him. Free Yuli. Free Yuli Edelstein. Free the refuseniks. It was part of our whole program to free the refuseniks. He was the personification of it. So you can just imagine how thrilling it is for me and Paul," that's her Bohemian Grove husband, "and me to be here with Yuli and Irving, having, as he was, this hero to all of us." So I don't know, but to me, this is just bizarre that she would make a story like that. One hopes it was just, you know, politician kiss the baby kind of craziness. But if that's real, I mean, that just, it just strikes me that her family cannot possibly be a legitimate, you know, as they claim, which of course they aren't. I mean, it just, everything, you know, we were talking about prior, it just shows how fake she is. I would think she's a converso family probably, and that this, you know, if she has this kind of focus on the refusenik, it comes from that perspective. I don't know how else to understand it.
Yeah, it's just why this concern, overwrought concern for the plight of Jews in Soviet Union when so many other people are suffering, not just in the Soviet Union, but around the world.
Yeah, I mean, you see pictures like Gavin Newsom. He's supposed to be a Catholic, and, you know, he's at the wall. You know, he's like all of the, you know, politicians, American politicians they bring there. You know, Tim, you know, you wonder, what, have these guys ever read the New Testament? They claim to be like Catholics. And, you know, it's like, because actually that story, the Jews don't actually come out looking that good, you know?
No.
And they're supposed to be these Catholic families. I mean, it's like, you know, you wonder about this. Every time you see it, you have to like kind of scratch your head and go, well, is this the basis for this kind of slavish, you know, adulation? And Tim, this is not, you know, historical. This is real, because remember Biden, if you've ever seen the video of him where he declares his love of Zionism, I mean, it's really very, very weird and creepy. Did you ever see
that? All his three kids married Jews?
Yeah, he meets this Jewish guy in a corridors and something, and the guy asks him about Zionism. And Biden does everything except grope him. He was just so desperate to convince him he was a Zionist. It's not a normal kind of emotion.
Yeah, Biden's, you know, the one that in that speech that praised the Jews for being responsible for the legalization of gay marriage in the United States.
Yeah.
It was called a gaffe. Of course, a gaffe is when you say something that's true inadvertently. Here's the article I found on Gavin Newsom, because this reminds me of this recent scandal with him being caught eating at a restaurant during, you know, the lockdown. This dates back to like 2006, 2007, but San Francisco mayor admits affair with campaign manager's wife. Now, I can just see Gavin Newsom's, you know, face apologizing, because I was watching that video, him explaining his visit to the French Laundry restaurant. San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom said all the reports about him having an affair with a chief aide's wife are true, and he's now trying to make up for it. How do you make up for that? Newsom said made a personal apology to his staff, friends, and family members following the resignation of campaign manager Alex Tork, 39, who had confronted Newsom about the affair the mayor had with Tork's wife, Ruby Rippey Tork. I want to make it clear that everything you've read is true, and I'm deeply sorry about that. I hurt someone I care about. I deeply care about Alex Tork and his family and friends, and that is something I'm deeply sad about and sorry for. He said in a brief on-camera statement, he took no questions from reporters on the scene. I am deeply sorry, and I'm accountable for what has occurred, and I have begun the process of reconciling it. Newsom added, how do you reconcile that, and what did he pay, or did he, you know?
You go to a sex addiction course.
Tork had served as Newsom's deputy chief of staff until September, when he became manager of his reelection campaign. This is what Tork said. I guess he's a cuck. It has been an honor and a privilege to serve the Newsom's campaign and the city of San Francisco and its residents, Tork said in a statement. He did not return phone calls and emails seeking comment by the Associated Press. Newsom, 39, who was seeking a second four-year term in November, said in a statement that he accepted Tork's resignation with great sadness, adding that he was an extraordinary leader of our campaigns and a tireless public servant. So that's the moral caliber of the man running your state, Joe. He's very sincere in his apology, like he was about being caught, having dinner inside, within 6 feet of people at a table.
I mean, he's obviously a liar and a hypocrite, but those are his best traits. I mean, this is a genocidist. I mean, believe me,
he's a great friend, so I'm going to screw his wife.
Yeah, I know. And I just couldn't feel worse about it. You know, I mean, he just feels so terrible about it that, you really want to vote for him. If you would look at San Francisco, because I'm close to it. We go up there all the time. And I've seen the city over the last 20 years, right? You know, and it's had a tremendous influx of money because of the tech boom. Mm-hmm. All of the techies wanted to live there. I mean, it was $4,000 or $5,000 for, a one bedroom apartment. I mean, it was just crazy how much money was sunk into the city. Now, that should have been a renaissance. There should have been a flowering of the city, all of this tax revenue. From the time Newsom took over as mayor to when he left, it just literally went from, penthouse to the cesspool. And by that, I mean, you could barely walk anywhere where you couldn't smell urine or feces. Mm-hmm. Because the street people just started to inhabit everywhere. They went out of their traditional areas, and there was no restraint on them in terms of their behavior. And there was, and even though the city had been so peaceful at one point, say like around 2000, now you could start, there was violence starting to come in. And so this was his, expertise as a politician. It was just to take a great city and to start the process of its destruction, which now as governor, he has basically completed, because if you go through San Francisco now, it's unrecognizable. The retail businesses are, so many of them are gone. So many of the storefronts are boarded up. There's been an enormous exodus out of the city, and yet who remained were the street people and Antifa types. Mm-hmm. So, you're even having a cultural transition. And this is the legacy of Newsom. It's preposterous that this guy should even be in politics after his actual observable track records, what he did with San Francisco. And now the fact that he's governor of California, not exactly surprising to see the state collapse here, is it?
Yeah. It's like, look at Willie Brown, who was the benefactor of Kamala Harris, our would be vice president. Right.
Yeah.
Where, she more or less slept with him And he gave her all types of positions and promotions and state government. He was the mayor of San Francisco too, where he had all types of crony deals with stadium development and mall development, kicking out a lot of poor blacks actually in the process. Also working class blacks. There was a thriving community there in San Francisco that he brushed aside when he illegal example voter fraud with the passing of the bond initiative, which they again was ballot stuffing. People scrutinized that vote. Same thing with last minute votes came in and approved it. But then he became Speaker of the House and this kingmaker in California politics. But at the end of the day, you're watching all these people get fabulously wealthy as the state sinks deeper and deeper into bankruptcy. Is there a correlation there, do you think?
Yeah, I would say so. But I mean, again, it's not, just like I'm sitting here with a curfew, which is really something more of a military dictatorship, right, than a medical. Literally, a healthy person, I'm here with a curfew. Fairly irritating, very, very
And by
upsetting.
the way, no force of no basis in law. It's
Absolutely not. I mean, what is the basis in law for, where it is in the Constitution that that without any process, he can just create this kind of mandate, which, believe me, I am not going to honor. The problem is I'm always asleep between 10 and 4, so it's hard for me to,
it's like, yeah, but I'm saying, what does that do
but
to
if I
that?
do happen to have an insomniac night, I'm going to be out there protesting.
A lot of restaurants and bars and other make their
Believe me,
money.
it is, again, just like those little details I mentioned about that. They have what's called the snap count now, where they can just shut it down
That's just
immediately if they
ridiculous. Can you
feel like
imagine
it.
that? You, I mean,
Yeah,
you have
they're.
a right to make a living that they presume the right to just to come in arbitrarily and capriciously shut everything down based on what? And this goes back to that
Based on
lawsuit in
what? 24
Ohio,
hours, right?
that
24
rents
hours.
lawsuit. At some point, you got to prove that there's actual crisis. But headlines and press conferences doesn't prove anything, by the way.
Well, I mean, in March, we were starting to talk. We talked about how this destruction of the economy is going to end up with starvation eventually, or food shortages. And I don't know if you caught the action in the food lines, they call them bread lines in Texas this week. But they were, it's a car up. You drive up in your car, and there was like 4 mile traffic jam. I mean, it's obviously starting. You can see that. I mean, look, you don't have the capacity to make a living. How are you going to feed yourself, right? There's a correlation between the two. Yeah, there's government largesse, which is, in the country right now, but how long can that continue?
Well, largesse has to be extracted from somewhere.
Well, money is invented here in the United States out of nothing, but the whole currency is at risk because of this. They're talking about between $4 and $8 trillion in, deficit next year, all of which will find its way into, in one way or another to keep people fed. But the food systems are going to break down in turn. They're not going to break down just at the point of sale, Tim. They're going to break down back further. Back further, you're already having stress. I've talked to farmers, and there's
Of course, I mean, you got this guy
obviously.
with on Biden's Corona Task Force, another thing, saying, was it Osterholm is his name? Dr. Osterholm. He's a,
Yeah.
I guess, a wannabe Fauci. And he's talking about, oh, 6 to 8 week lockdown. We can just write people checks. No big deal. National lockdown.
Yeah, that's right. Just write them checks. Well, let me tell you something. California, they don't even know how many unemployed because we have a lot of Latinos here that don't, for whatever reason, they don't declare. But Tim, we could be like 25 million. Round number, something like that. It's a big number. I mean, if Gavin Newsom can use that number for how many coronavirus victims, I can use it for unemployment. It's a big number, and no one knows how big it is. And right now, it's being papered over by all of these subsidies from the government, the unemployment, different kinds of unemployment
Yeah, you
checks.
don't. I mean, you get at some point the public has to take responsibility for this because you're going to be frightened of an invisible bug. So you let yourself be run unemployed and you starve to death? Which,
Well,
by the way, in the
exactly.
process of starving to death, you get sick. And
Yeah,
maybe
and
they'll call
we
that
should be
COVID
taking
too, I
action
suppose.
before we actually start feeling the effects of hunger. I would think that next year, 2021, you will actually start seeing hunger in the United States. I said it last March. I said that it won't happen at once, but I said next year, if this I didn't believe the lockdowns would ever stop. I never did, because once they would start it, since it was obviously artificial, there had to be a purpose for it. They weren't going to start it just to do an experiment. It's sort of like the example I gave was the slave train that goes on in airports when you when you know, want to get on a plane, and they radiate you and they make you go take your shoes off, all this nonsense. This is slave training. Well, this appears to me to be just slave training on a larger scale. So it isn't going to go away. Just it's never going to go away. So the economic activity level will always get worse. It will get worse every day as we go forward. I mean, think about what they've done with the actions of this last week, what Newsom has done to the small businesses and medium-sized businesses in California.
And then that, just think about this. The CDC is telling people not to travel.
Yeah, and don't travel.
So don't visit your family. Don't you know, this actually may help with people's depression and dealing with the crisis, but they don't want people to do that because of these test spikes. People can't see through that. And if people still give credibility to these institutions, I mean, I don't know. They're asking for it. At this point, I'm thinking, I mean, look out your freaking window. You know, stop watching television. Stop watching the headlines. You're telling people. I mean, Pennsylvania, the governor actually signed a decree saying that if you visit someone's home, you have to wear a mask. No way to enforce that, of course, but the fact that he even presumes the right to even require that is absurd. Putting limits on, you know, I think in California it's 10 people, in New York it's 10 people, in some states it's 25 people. No one's going to really follow that. And who's going to enforce that? But just the psychological effect of these things. The fact that what's sad is a sizable portion of the country will follow it because they're that brain dead. They're that worried. Well, they wouldn't say this if there wasn't something serious out there as a reaction. It was like, you have that blind trust in your government after Pearl Harbor, after the Gulf of Tonkin in Vietnam, you know, after Watergate, if you want to worry about that, Iran-Contra, the drugs, the you know, these things, 9/11, the 93 World Trade Center bombing. This election debacle, obviously, you're just because they tell you something, you're going to believe it. And that's, well, it's one of the, well, one of the silver linings in some of this election stuff is, and also with the lockdown, is they've showed their hand. They've gone a little too far. And I would say that, perhaps a slight majority now don't have any trust in their institutions and government, which might be the ultimate objective because they want to, you know, be able to justify shutting everything down. No one, you know, what they've done is they've indicted the idea of government and a community. It just isn't managed anymore because everything is just so corrupt. No, they're corrupt. You know, they are.
Yeah, John Kerry last week said, he used the word reset. He said, the reset is so important. He said, it's more important than ever because it's the only thing that can head off populism. I'm serious. No, I mean,
populism. John,
yeah, I mean, and of course, what does he mean by populism? I mean, he said that the notion of a reset is more important than ever before, because
under whose terms?
He says we need to deal with the rising of national populism, nationalistic populism. So what he's really, of course, what he's talking about is ethnicity.
So John Kerry, the crypto Jew.
Yeah,
is going after the idea of nationalism. Now is that, does that like take into account Zionism?
Yeah, right. No, I guess that's a nationalistic, populism that doesn't need to be reset. But you know, bear in mind when you get stuff from that from Kerry, you know he's well identified as a lifetime actor. I mean, Kerry is a guy like Getty, right? I mean, they took him to Vietnam and they tried to make him a war hero. Mm-hmm. And it was artificial, but you knew that they were going to, you know, do something with him because immediately when he got back, they put him in front of the Senate.
Yeah, an anti-war hero.
Yeah, he was like an anti-war
just
hero.
Just fake, yeah.
And he was like the Skull and Bones guy playing the role of the anti-war hero because they're trying to create a leader for the young people. And he was addressing all of the people sitting, you know, from the Senate role, Skull and Bones guys, like, you know, McBundy was there, all this stuff. It was just this ludicrous. I mean, it was actually as ludicrous as later on when he has a debate with Bush. I mean, it's just this skull and bones,
two skull and bones members,
you know, kind of pageant where they're pretending and everyone is thinking that this is sort of a serious thing. But the point is that Kerry making this statement is very clarifying because, you know, he's a crypto Jew. And incidentally, obviously, you know, the crypto Jew stuff, he claims that he found out about that after, right, he gets into politics. Did you know that? Have you ever heard the story about that? But this is obviously a lie, right? Because they wouldn't have picked him out for, you know, like fake war hero and skull and bones if they didn't know his Converso background. So he's obviously lying about this. And so now when you see him, you know, complaining that, you know, we need to do the reset is more important than ever because of the rising national populism. You know, what you have is like basically a crypto Jew lecturing Europeans on giving up your ethnicity and taking the vaccine while he, of course, you know, will, you know, do everything he possibly can to support Israel's destruction of the Palestinians.
Yeah. And of course, this, the Great Reset, again, is something that the New York Times says is just a conspiracy theory, crazy conspiracy theory. It's a myth.
Yeah, but they could talk to John Kerry because he actually used the expression, and that was this week, incidentally.
Well, that or the fact that the Canadian Prime Minister referred to it last September in a online address to the United Nations, and there's a website that talks about it.
Well, Klaus, what's his name?
Klaus Schwab.
Schwab. I mean, he just talks about the Great Reset, like, you know, this is just, you know, everyone is aware of it. We just got to go forward.
Yeah, well, he's the head of Spectre. You know, he's like a Bond villain.
Yeah.
Ever take over the world? You know, he's like, but yeah, I mean, we have these. Then another family like this is the Governor Pritzker. He's quite a piece. whatever. He's put his state on lockdown, but he was caught during the lockdown. Governor Pritzker had workers and business. He had businesses locked down in his state. The billionaire governor had workers building on his mansion in Wisconsin, working at his mansion in Wisconsin. Same time, he spirited his wife and family down to Florida for a vacation. Again, this is all during supposed lockdown.
You know, it's funny, incidentally. The Pritzker family is, after the Gettys, the second largest donor to Gavin Newsom.
Yes. Yeah.
So Newsom, you know, the Gettys and the Pritzkers basically are the money, you know, it costs a lot to become a mayor when all you can do is just, you know, make the place smell like a sewer. You know, you don't really have a lot of credibility. You need a lot of, you don't have a big budget to get reelected. So they came up with huge money for this guy.
Their big supporters like transgenderism, the Tide Foundation. They work with Soros. Oh, yeah. Someone in the military is transgendered or something. They're pushing all types of pharmaceutical research. Also corrupting science. They haven't talked about the science. Well, they fund all these research institutes that to convince people that it's perfectly healthy and normal to do transgender surgery. I guess reassignment surgery they call it. And so they're big advocates of normalizing that. That's an interesting thing there. And of course, I think the heir to the Hyatt Hotel fortune, and the source of that fortune dates back to the plunder in California right after the Second World War, the plunder of the Japanese families, the Hyatt.
Yeah, they've just gone so far out of the way to try to normalize homosexuality and transgenderism. My favorite example is the Wachowski brothers. I think they're the people who made The Matrix, the movie.
That's right, both of them, right?
They both changed to women. They just spent too much time with Keanu Reeves and that just, you know, had to make a switch. I don't know, but I mean, it's just, and then this becomes like a big deal, you know, it's normal.
And they're the ones that fund Barack Obama. They created Barack Obama's book, and also Rahm Emanuel. And of course, now Zeke Emanuel's brother is supposedly going to be in the Biden administration, his chief advisor, who is admitted genocidal. he doesn't think you should live past the age of 75, and of course Biden's 78 or something.
I know. Well, I mean, that just shows you like what the presidency is going to be like. I mean, the the first thing they're going to do is put Camille in after, you know, like they have Biden's funeral.
Yeah, and Zeke Emanuel is one advocated like a year lockdown or something, some ridiculous back.
March. Sad to say, the lockdowns are it's just a way of life. I mean,
if people tolerate it.
Yeah, I mean, the only way we're going to get out of this is to fight our way out, because they are using – it should be obvious now, shouldn't it, Jim, that this is just slave training. I mean, the disease is literally non-existent. And so the reason that you know, you have all of this spectacular propaganda about it is to create something malevolent. I mean, people should be looking for the malevolence, and mm-hmm. the fact is, it's right in front of them. It's just the slave training. You are giving up all of your constitutional rights. You can't assemble. You can't. There's no freedom of religion. Free speech is gone. I mean, so this is what the magic COVID disease has done: is it gets rid of all of the rights that you have.
Yeah, in Ireland, they're arresting priests for holding mass.
Sure.
And I imagine if priests had the balls to do it here, they try to arrest them.
Yeah. Now, in the positive note, there have been some really great demonstrations in Europe. Europe is ahead of America in terms of the response back. In Denmark, they had like the whole city, capital city, just stuffed with protesters.
Isn't it a super spreader event?
Pardon me?
It's a super spreader event.
Yeah, the super spreader event. And this was because they were trying to get this real draconian mandatory vaccine law, and the Danes became frightened or concerned about it. They protested and they won. They actually stopped the law from coming into effect. But moreover, the Danes, surprisingly, were very heroic about dealing with the police. I mean, there was a couple of videos I saw where they defended people from the police. You know, they wouldn't let them arrest them.
Yeah.
And in Berlin, that's happening now, too. The German protests are getting really violent. They're starting to. And believe me, if we're going to get out from the lockdown, they're going to have to become a lot more physical.
That, because, or you're going to need a situation like you had in, you know, Romania in 1989, December 89, when just the police defected.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. And it's starting to happen there in a little bit. There in Australia, there was quite a few police that signed on to this, you know, kind of proclamation about, you know, we don't want to continue with this. We think it's against the Australian Constitution. We need to rot them out in two ways. We need to get into the heads of all of the people who are trying to force us to comply. All low-level management, all cops, the low-level military. We need to get in there with information. The independent media. The independent media needs access to these guys to make them aware that they're doing something evil. And then we have to fight, you know, we have to fight. We have to open up stores and then just defend them from the police.
Well, actually, you need hundreds of businesses to hire a few attorneys and file clash action lawsuits against their respective governors and mayors.
Of course.
Just do it, because what we found like in Pennsylvania, you know, whether it's more, you know, some of the most draconian laws are in Pennsylvania. I mentioned that mask law inside the house. They're even presuming the right to require people that visit the state to be tested 72 hours before they enter the state. It's like, how do you enforce that? First of all, it's a violation of the Constitution. I can enter Pennsylvania whenever I damn well please. You know, you can't demand anything of me. Screw you. And, you know, I'm go up there. What are you going to do? But anyway, there was a fine. There was a business, a restaurant that was fined $10,000, and they adjudicated it, and the fine was thrown out. So whenever these things are challenged, they lose. So if all these businesses, you have to have consciousness that the thing's a scam, then from that comes some measure of empowerment. Then you develop agency, and agency is getting together and suing the hell out of these governments, at the same time violating the order, saying to hell with your license, that you're misusing the license power anyway. You can get an injunction against that anyway, but you need some organization. That's a legitimate way to do it. A second way is you just need to write, as Scott Atlas tweeted in response to the Whitmore's latest lockdown orders. By the way, these governors have been swatted down time and time again from their respective state courts, and they just forget that they've told that their actions are unconstitutional, and then they do it again and again. How many court orders do you have to ignore to get impeached? But he said, rise up, and oh, how dare you do this? That's the only solution. We reached a point. I was reading a quote. This was like 25 years old, or maybe 30 years old, but it said, right now we're at a point where no one believes the system works for them, but it's too early to shoot the bastards. Well,
Well,
the hour may be getting late.
you know what? I think with Operation Warp Speed, you're
Yes.
going to get some
You might get some shooting,
acceleration
yes.
in that. I mean, personally, I'm just going to treat myself to the principle of self-defense, you know.
Well, respond to needles with lead.
Yeah,
You
I'm
know?
not going to let them. That's one thing. That's where, you know, it's easy for me to be brave because I'm old, you know, just big deal, you know. But even if I was young, I hope I would, you know, have the guts to like to say, no, I'm sorry. You don't get to control and create my DNA.
Yeah.
That's between me and myself, you know. So, you know,
And
I just
also,
want.
don't just focus on, I know they're easy targets. I mean, a Newsom, I'm like, geez, who can't hate him, you know?
Yeah.
And of course, what we see with elections, how do we trust the election results? See, if it gets elected 60% of the vote, how do you trust that now?
You can't trust it.
You
It's just, it's a
know,
level
it's like a
screen.
Soviet
I mean,
election.
if there's one thing that the latest election revealed is that elections are a joke. They're just a theatrical
Yes.
production.
It turns out even Virginia, which is considered safely blue now because of the northern part of the state, it turns out there are some questions there now because,
Yeah. I honestly, you know, I just think there is just no integrity whatsoever. It's just,
What is funny is that you drawing the question integrity of the electoral system, I just start laughing.
Yeah.
It's
I just
like.
wanted to say, so I was gonna, I have this guy that contacted me, and he is very graciously wants to set up a bulletin board.
Yeah.
I think it's a good idea. I don't know how many people want to subscribe to it, but I'll put the links there. And this isn't something that Tim and I are like, you know, endorsing. It's a bulletin board that people can make use of if you feel like you're in an area and as Operation Warp Speed comes your way, you might want to see if there's any like-minded people around that could have suggestions as to, you know, how to deal with this.
Yeah, no,
Because
yeah.
we're at a situation now where things could happen pretty quick. I think the country is going to be dramatically moved along culturally over the next 3 months, buddy. I think we're going to have a lot of strange events.
Well, like I said, look at these political figures, whether it's Newsom or Pelosi, you know, or Pritzker, you know, they, or Pritzker's kind of a higher elect, so that's kind of like a billionaire family. That's kind of like where they, you know, the oligarch actually became a politician. You remember where Pelosi did the thing with her refrigerator last April or
Yeah, when she
March?
had all the chocolate ice
She had
cream.
the $25,000 refrigerator with the
Yeah.
$8 a pint ice cream, or $12 a pint ice cream, or something. You know, that's just showing how much she has contempt. She has hatred for you when she's doing that.
Yeah, she doesn't have
Was it
contempt.
wasn't her political tin ear? She was. They liked doing this. Somebody Newsom almost probably enjoyed going up and giving his apology. He loves just, you know, shoving people's
Because it's
faces.
just they enjoy the apologies because it's a way of humiliating the people that they hate. I mean, Newsom, while he's creating these, you know, you can't have Thanksgiving with your family, he's sitting there with a group of 20 decadent. I mean, if you'd seen the pictures of them, this is a very sleazy crowd he's
Yeah.
hanging
Oh, by
with.
the way, I think one of the attendants was head of the State Medical Association.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. But I mean, the women were, you know, I don't know. It's the kind of party I don't get invited to. So it wasn't a pretty picture.
Well, I
And
mean, my point is they pass themselves off as these progressive politicians. They talk about the
yes.
new economy, more equitable and fair. I mean, the guy. He's a multimillionaire. He's a beneficiary of the Getty family. Pelosi has, you know, has a $100 million fortune. You know, she has a
Yeah, but no one
$20,000
knows
refrigerator, which she probably didn't
where
pay
does it
for.
come from? I mean, where in
Yeah.
heck does Pelosi's money come from? And she passes herself off as a flaming feminist, and her husband is a member of Bohemian Grove,
Yeah, well.
where he runs around in a loincloth with Henry Kissinger and David Rockefeller.
That's a
I mean, is
pretty
this
sight.
feminism? Is this feminism? You
Yeah.
know, this is, so this is, she's just lying to you. You know, there's nothing real here. This is a Lifetime actor. She's just there to, you know, to promote feminism, to break up European families.
Yep. So, well, they're the people that that the American people let rule over them.
Well, we're
but
going
it
to
turns
change
out they
that.
can't. I mean, like I said, who with the, what's being revealed about the voting system is like, you know, what mechanism is there for even challenging them? Even should you have put a candidate up to defeat? Not to mention, you know, the whole media censorship and all that stuff and social media, and you can't have a few oligarchs control the source of information. And practice censorship and expect a functioning
Yeah, but
democracy
you
to
know,
exist.
the best thing that's happened in the last couple of years is people leaving Fox News. Fox
Yeah.
News, their subscription has just collapsed because of their bailing out on Trump, basically. You know, the only thing they have left was Tucker Carlson, and then he kind of went against, you know, the Trump attorneys. So,
well, I said that segment was because more than half that segment was pretty good. Then at the final party, he attacks Sidney Powell for not coming on the show and offering up all this evidence. I don't think it's a proper form for that. I mean, they started the press conference saying this is a summary. You know,
yeah,
then what did they expect?
Yeah, they won't. They'll get in front of the Supreme Court, I bet. And I think it'll be probably in 2 weeks. So I think between now and then, they'll, you know, in theory, they're just gathering evidence and creating a logical presentation. I don't think they care a bit about the lower courts. They're going to end up in the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, they're probably, if this is real, because as you know, I'm very skeptical of this. But, you know, he met with Michigan's Republican legislative leaders. And I think the idea is to get people to start towing the party line, which is that the election was fraudulent. We're going to ask you to create the electors, and we want them to be, you know, for the president. This will be an interesting moment. You know, you could have actually dueling inaugurations, which would be kind of something that's, you know, would be a logical situation to, in some ways, because it would create maximum chaos. You know, you could really damage the middle class. But I don't think that's likely, Tim, because I think they're going to want to maintain power, political cohesion during Operation Warp Speed. I mean, that's, in my opinion, that's what they really are heading toward. And so they don't want the country to fall apart until they've vaccinated everybody.
Yeah, it all depends if there is a meaningful or coherent faction opposing it.
Yeah,
because at some point to implement this, you have to involve a lot of people, and that's where you always creates the opportunity or the chance of saying, whoa, slow down, and we're not going to do this. You know, and so that might explain something that's going on here. It's hard to, you know, we're on the outside looking in. You know, you're always reading the comments like saying, oh, it's all fake, doesn't matter, and from people who pretend to know it all, and they don't. You know, they don't. I don't go to the party, so I don't know it all. You know,
yeah,
you can only speculate. At the same time, we are presented with a situation where it was a fraudulent election, and truth needs to be vindicated, and Trump did win genuinely, and then he should be the president, and then we'll fight the next battle. But we can't go this route with this. You know, it's just too obvious at this point, and to me, to let go. Oh, just for the purposes of a smooth transition, as they say, how is that smooth when you have a stolen election? You know,
yeah, a smooth fraudulent transition. Yeah, it's absurd. It's an oxymoron. So yeah.
And as John Rappaport says, with Trump and his people, there's some light. With Biden, it's only darkness.
Well, to me, it's just really bad optics. I think optics are important. I mean, Biden and Harris are just the worst imaginable.
Oh, geez, insufferable.
it's just so horrible to think about.
But there's word that Biden's thinking of point of bringing in Rachel Levine, the man who pretends to be a woman, head of Secretary of Health in Pennsylvania, into the administration. I don't know if that's true or not. But
I bet you there won't be one white heterosexual in the cabinet.
No, it has to reflect America, because America is just made of transgendered homosexuals and black people now. We're dark.
I mean, that's it. I mean, it
there are no
literally
white
will
people in
look
America
like
anymore.
the cabinet will look like, you know, the commercials on PBS. I mean, you're just going to have nothing but I mean, there won't be a heterosexual white male in even anywhere, you know. So it's just preposterous. It's just propaganda. And it's going to be an interesting month, eh, Tim? We'll see.
We'll see. Okay, Joe.
All right, brother. Have a great weekend.
Enjoy the weekend.
You too. Talk
Bye-bye.
To you.